near the president, we at NASA wish him a great round of golf. Trump staying at his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey, about 29 miles from where it landed. NASA said the package was part of six balloons that were launched to measure ozone, and a summer student employee wrote the note in a misguided attempt to be lighthearted. They also say the student's been removed from that project.
Your final numbers on Wall Street for the week. The Dow was down 196 points to close the week at 25,313. This is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has a bill on his desk that, if he signs into law, would give employees 3 months paid bereavement time to mourn the loss of their loved ones. John Taffer is host of Bar Rescue and an entrepreneur himself. He says one of the things people need to realize is this money from the restaurants and the service industry will come from somewhere.
When people have to reduce their work schedules because of it, so people lose jobs, that's not good. When businesses close because of it, because people lose jobs, that isn't good either. You know, the wage increases in other cities have closed thousands of restaurants. You know, this is cause and effect. You raise the numbers and one of two things happen. Either we pass it on to the consumer, that's not a great effect on the economy, or the businesses close.
Taffer also talks about what he believes can be done to get rid of this entitlement mentality.
It seems that no matter how many more we add, there are people in Washington who wake up every day with a purpose of creating more. So obviously these get votes, and there are elements to our society that will vote for candidates that act in this way. So this is really a very selfish act when you think about it. It's very self-serving to the politician and to getting votes. It's not self-serving to the state. And I travel around America, and I see New York State ads all the time, right? New infrastructure, lower taxes, and it sounds terrific.
Right.
But then when you look at these types of layers of costs in New York.
That audio courtesy of Fox News, and please remember, you can check us out online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Well, Bill, how are you? We're going to start with the sports guys, and John is on his way out to Ohio, Cincinnati, to see his daughter, so it'll be the two of us today. And
well, Pat, let's hear about the weather.
You want to hear about? No, you don't want to hear about the weather. You really don't want to hear about the weather.
Pat, how come you, whenever you talk about the weather, you always make it bad weather?
Well, unfortunately, this weekend, if the weather prediction is even close to what they say. Now, today, of course, we were supposed to have scattered thunderstorms, 40% chance. I don't know if it started raining since I've come in, but it wasn't a nice day, but it certainly wasn't, raining, no thunderstorms. Tonight, about a 30% chance of scattered thunderstorms, then a 50% chance of scattered showers. So, but tomorrow is not looking good. It's really not. Saturday, we have an 80% chance of heavy rain. And then into Saturday night, about an 80% chance of showers, 60% chance of showers. They're likely on Sunday, and again on Sunday night and into Monday. However, this is the weather for Flemington, and what you'd have to do, of course, is look at the shore, because the shore weather is very different. So, in fact, can you pull up the shore weather and see if anybody down there is looking to have better weather than we are? Because even into Tuesday, I mean, this looks like a real washout until possibly Wednesday, when it says mostly sunny and a high near 87 degrees. And again, however, there could be a chance of showers and thunderstorms on Thursday. However, it should be mostly sunny. And Thursday night, Friday, again, partly sunny, but a chance of showers or thunderstorms. And this doesn't seem like just the, you know, thunderstorms when it's real hot all day and then you get a thunderstorm. I mean, that was, you know, that's pretty usual. But this seems much more pervasive.
Well, that is usual because remember, especially if you're down the shore, you get that late afternoon, the air is rising over the land, drawing the cooler air in from the sea. It's a typical sea breeze. But what happens is you get these clouds that fill with moisture because they've come up, and suddenly you get late afternoon thunderstorms. You see these big anvil-shaped clouds that are coming along the horizon, and then they get lower and lower, and finally they're above you, and you'll get a flash storm. They're storm cells. Sometimes it just rains buckets for an hour or maybe 5 minutes, then it stops. But it's not so much the rain that's troubling as it is the lightning, which is really dangerous.
Well, it certainly is around water.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
You know, I live right near Round Valley. It doesn't seem to me that the reservoir is up or is very high. You know, it's been down, I think, for the last couple of years. But in any event, what I am hearing is how dangerous the Delaware has been and how people, you know, have not been able to...
tube or canoe.
Go tubing, especially over there, and that it really has been, you know, the water is very high. And it's, you know, something you have to be very careful in any river, but, you know, especially the Delaware. And if they say stay off, stay off. But I know you haven't had much time in your boat, but I'm sure that it's really been affecting the tubing over on the Delaware River.
Oh, it sure has. In fact, these flash floods speed up the water. You have less control in the water. You have very powerful currents. Plus, you know, the Delaware has a lot of rocks, a lot of islands, a lot of submerged trees, and the current is fast enough to sweep you right into it. You can get seriously injured, break ribs, things like that. I've been tubing on the Delaware since I've been about 18 or 19, and it's really a lot of fun.
Oh, it is a lot of fun.
But and I've been canoeing on the upper Delaware all the way down almost to Phillipsburg and Easton. And they're wonderful canoe trips, especially from the New York line. So what happens is, though, that if the weather gets bad, you get, or even threatens, you get off the Delaware quickly. And, you know, you find some nice, quiet restaurant or bar or something like that.
Only you, Bill.
Until the storm passes.
Well, and that same problem with, obviously, on Round Valley, you know, I had an unfortunate experience a few years ago where we were out in a canoe that jumped. And, you know, it doesn't take much on Round Valley, a little wind, and, of course, the boats, even though they have to be under 10 horsepower, you know, they can throw up some waves, especially if you're in a canoe out too far.
And, you know, you're responsible for the damage caused by your wake no matter where you are on the water. You know, the interesting thing is I was on a canoe trip with a number of clients that had come over from Germany years ago, and the weather got bad, and we had to get off the river. And we spent 4 hours in a Dairy Queen, which really wasn't all that terrible. But
okay, well, let's get back.
Down in buckets.
Let's get back to sports. I wanted to talk a little bit. Well, first of all, it's probably a good thing that John isn't here because he would be talking about the Red Sox Yankee series, which I'm sure. Do you have any excuse at all as to how that happened to your Yankees?
Oh, yes. The Yankees had a lot of injuries. Their pitching didn't hold up. They had some very quiet bats. I thought they were going to have a split, But unfortunately, the Red Sox are showing why a team that's playing 700 ball can beat a team that's only playing 600 ball or 650 ball. The Red Sox seem to be, at this point in the season, head and shoulders above the Yankees.
Well,
they've proved it over the last four games.
Maybe they've changed now, but I thought, weren't they at about 9.5 games ahead?
I think they're about eight and a half as of today, because the Yankees turned it around and won three straight from the White Sox this weekend, this week, and they just won one from Tampa at the stadium. I think they're in Tampa tonight again. So the Yankees are struggling right now, but they seem to have righted the ship. But remember, the Yankees have the rest of their schedule, except for the final week where they play the Red Sox for three or four games at the end of September. The Yankees are playing only one or two teams with good records above 500, whereas the Red Sox, buzzsaws that they are going to be playing the Clevelands and the Astros and some of the other challenging teams like Seattle. My big worry is the Yankees get into a wild card game where, you know, it's winner take all, one game,
right,
and lose. And that'll be the end of the season, and then I'll just have to watch football.
Well, we always like watching football, but you know, there's another sport that's really been in the news this week, and none of the three of us are basketball fans, but you know, the report, the NCAA, of course, has been attempting to reform college basketball, and you know, that was an FBI investigation that exposed the widespread corruption. And so there were sweeping reforms unveiled on Wednesday. I think it was on Wednesday.
What are those reforms, Pat? Well, I haven't heard too much about that.
Yeah, well, the heart of the problem, and there's a lot of, there are a few things that they did right, and then there are a lot of people who are, saying that they just haven't really looked at the problem or dealt with the problem, because the heart of the problem, at least what one reporter calls, it's beloved concept of amateurism. And, you know, that these kids from high school into college and through college are supposed to be amateurs. And so, you know, the universities are making tens of millions of dollars from, you know, shoe and apparel contracts that they have. You know, it's always been, as big a sports fan as I am, it's just always been amazing to me that the coaches earn more than university presidents. Not only the football coaches, which I suppose I could somehow justify, I can't, but the you know, the basketball coaches and the best players. You know how much they get?
Nope, nothing.
Well, they get their tuition and they get their room and board, and I'm not sure if they get books. But, you know, that's what they get to play. And, of course, many of these kids come out of very, you know, poor situations. So there's always been this underground economy that everybody realized, and that the, you know, agents and financial advisors make under-the-table bribes to elite players or to their agents. And it's just been a huge problem. I recall a few years ago that there were a number of University of Wisconsin players who were suspended because they accepted shoes. Now, you know what? If they accepted basketball shoes, why isn't that part of something that they get? But in any event,
what's wrong with a free pair of basketball shoes? It's not like that's going to do anything to anybody.
So anyway, the new rules, there are a few good things, but also there are harsher penalties. So one of the things that I think it's good is that it's now going to be okay for undrafted players to return to school. And after they participate, for example, if these kids participate in an NBA combine and then go unselected, they will be able to go back to school and finish. I never knew that they couldn't. I never knew that they were risking going to school, going back to school, and losing their scholarships if they went to the combine. So then also there's a question about what's going to happen, and there's some changes with what they call the elite high school players. And if they're considered an elite high school player. They'll be able to hire an agent the summer before their senior year if the NBA opts to begin allowing players to be drafted out of high school. They are not now able to do that. So, of course, there are lots of kids that, you know, are not good academically, come from very poor schools, and then, of course, go into colleges, and they have a horrible time with all the time they have to spend practicing and playing, keeping up their grades. But in any event, if that happens, if the NBA opts to begin allowing players to be drafted out of high school, and also with college players in some circumstances, in other words, if they enter the draft and requests are from the NBA, they can go back, and there's some things there that they'll be able to, and I'm not sure I know exactly how that works. But in any event, the problem is that it's the USA Basketball has to determine who is an elite senior prospect. So they make the call, and who is it? So, of course, you know, Bill, as lawyers, one of the things that I would think of is, wait, USA Basketball is only dealing with kids playing basketball in the United States. Now, granted, it's not like baseball where we have so many foreign players coming in. However, you know, what about the foreign-born? I mean, we do have R.J. Barrett from Canada or Charles Bassey from Nigeria. And in the future, I mean, I can understand where there will be and there may be more players, especially some of the, you know, really tall guys from Africa who, you know, once they start introducing more basketball in some of these countries, that's going to be an issue. But anyway, that, you know, that to me is who's an elite player. Not everybody's going to be selected as an elite player. What about the other guys? Why not let anyone, if they're going to have a rule to allow someone to have an agent, why not let anybody have an agent, in my view?
Well, I agree with you there. The thing that I never understood was this. The college gives these young men or young women tuition, room, and board, but in a very real sense, they're being exploited because they could skip college, sign with the NBA right away if they were that good, or play in some kind of an NBA minor league, which I know they've established something like that, and make whatever money they're going to make. Now, a professional athlete's career is usually very short, and what other opportunity will many of these young people have to make that kind of money ever? And they're at the point in their lives where they're young, and like everybody, many other young people, you don't always have the best judgment about money because you just don't have the experience of handling it. So there's two ways for them to get exploited, both by the university. I mean, these people can't even control their own likenesses. The other thing is that the universities are making so much money from television and from product endorsements and things like that, that there really should be some way to compensate these people better.
I think that's what a lot of people say. Now, I'm not so sure if you look at the minor leagues in baseball, and these kids are played, you know, paid almost nothing. But the one thing that is good about this is at least Division I schools will be required to pay tuition, fees, and books for players, both men and women, who leave after 2 years to turn pro and then come back to complete their degree as long as they do that within 10 years.
Well, the thing that I don't get is this. If you're cut from a team, do you still get your tuition, room, and board?
If they come, it is now, if they leave after 2 years to turn pro, under this new rule, under the new rules, if they leave, as long as they've played for at least 2 years at college, and then they return, they can complete their degree, and the colleges will have to pay their tuition fees and books for these players.
But what happens, Pat, if you end up in a situation where you play for a year, and let's say you're injured on the court, and you have a serious leg injury or back injury, and you can no longer play? Do you still get your tuition for the until you graduate?
Well, I'm not clear on this. I don't think that they come back and are able to come back and play college ball. It's just that the Division I schools are going to have to provide them with tuition fees and books for those players if they come back. So I would think that that would, for anyone who's injured, they will in fact be able to come back at least to finish their degree.
Yeah, the other thing that's curious to me is, you know, you're recruited, and then you don't, and you're promised all of these nice things by the coaches, and the school should guarantee them for the 4 years you're there, whether you're cut from a team or not. And I'm not saying cut for misconduct. I'm saying you're cut because there's two other people who are better than you that have come forward, and the coaches would rather play them, and they're limited to a certain number of guys or gals on a team.
Well, my understanding is in fact, I know that's the case for some sports, because there was a question as to, I remember watching a Bryant Gumbel, and I think, by the way, his programs are excellent. I mean, they really are. Do you watch Bryant Gumbel on sports?
Now and then. I'm not a fan.
There was a, well, I was never a fan of him, but I really like these programs. There was a young woman, I believe she was a discus thrower at Temple, and the pressure on these kids. But in any event, when she no longer could, she basically had a mental breakdown. When she came back to school, she automatically lost her scholarship if she wasn't on the team. So I think, you know, you're right. I mean, that's a real problem. And it also seems to me that it might make some sense if kids that are on teams, you know, tuition, room and board fees, but they also have to have some money. And, what happens is that's why there's all this under-the-table money. You know, some of these colleges, they're big fans. I mean, these kids are wined and dined, and they're given a lot of money, and it's under the table. Why not make it above the table? And then, if they violate, then harsh penalties could, in fact, be imposed.
Well, you make a good point, Pat. Now, I don't really understand the whole culture of college sports anymore. You like to think of them as amateurs, but you're deluding yourself, because they're not. They're paid, whether it's tuition and books, but you also see a lot of these people getting cars or being given cash by alumni, or suddenly they have very fancy new shoes or whatever it might be. And it always seemed to me that it was a complete sham, and the universities were really using these programs to generate revenue.
They
certainly should have been sharing it. Now, when you look at the cost of tuition these days for just about anybody, you really have to wonder how much of the dollar that is generated, say, from parents paying tuition or people getting student loans, that really flows on down to the classroom and gives people a quality education and quality preparation for the rest of their life.
Well, I mean, that is one of the concerns at many of the small schools where the athletic program is really a drain. In other words, we always talk about some of these universities making millions of dollars, but that's not across the board. In fact,
very much you're right. And the interesting thing is this, you know, not everybody is out there to play football or basketball or one of the major televised sports. The claim that these sports, the major sports, support the less photogenic, for lack of a better word, sports, say like fencing
or tennis or wrestling or track and field is frankly a sham, because most of the money goes back into the football or basketball program. We have a football coach right in this state who makes more money than the governor. And I think the governor so far has had a better year, even though he's just been in office since January.
If he's Rutgers, he's probably, little Podunk College is going to have a better record. But you're right. And one of the things, as I said, is that this is a drain in many cases. On the other hand, what really has helped the other sports, and certainly women's sports, is Title IX. I mean, there's no question that now that those lesser sports have to be funded, and especially the women's sports, that has really made a major, major impact on universities and sports that women play at universities.
And particularly in sports where women are competing in track and field events, like the hammer throw, the discus, pole vaulting, things like that, where you might never see these events unless you were the parent of one of the participants and you went because that was your daughter or son participating. You just wouldn't see those things. Now, at least those programs seem to be getting some money trickling down, and you're going to see more and more of it. You know, and when you talk about Division I schools, that's great. But when you talk about the Division III schools, like let's say you have a small school like in the middle of, say, Central Pennsylvania, and the school may have been there for 120 years, and it's probably an excellent school, and maybe there's only 3,000 students in the whole school. They are not going to see the big money going into a lot of their programs. But I think the NCAA missed the boat here. I think there should be some form of revenue sharing with some of these smaller schools, because these kids are just as worthy. They may not be as talented. They may not have been discovered by the coach. They may not be able to run as fast as somebody might like or catch a football as well. But on the other hand, this is a funny, funny, touchy subject, because we all pretend that they're amateurs, particularly at Division I schools. But at Division III schools, they truly are, because they're really not getting much more than uniforms and school tuition.
Well, that's an interesting concept, although if it raised the cost of tuition at any school, I think there'd be a huge hue and cry. I think the question is whether or not, all of these schools should have all of the sports. And I know that there was one, it was a black school in the South, I don't remember the name of it, and the president decided that they were not going to have sports anymore. They couldn't afford it. The kids there were not coming from wealthy homes. He had actually himself, he had played, and I don't remember what sport, this was a while ago that I'd seen it, and they actually turned the football field into a garden, and they were raising a lot of the food for the university and, getting a lot of kids involved in that. And, it really made a lot of sense. And, I'm sure that in many cases they, the students were not happy that they didn't have teams. On the other hand, they chose to go to a school that didn't have a team.
Well, so instead of punting footballs, they were punting cantaloupes.
That's right. Well, and we're going to punt if
Pat?
We don't take a break.
It's
so we're going to take a little break.
Let's
and be back
and
after some
happy,
sponsor.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 40 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisals, sales and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investors, Rabcoin has been for the industry since 1974. Founder and owner Randy Block has been an expert and an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hey, Bill, we're back. And what else is happening in sports?
Well, you know, the Giants played their first exhibition game, and we saw a brilliant run by Saquon Barkley. It looks like he's going to be the real deal. He had a 36-yard run, had three touches, and nobody threw the ball to him. So we don't really know what to expect there. But I think the Giants are going to have an exciting season. I think my Philadelphia Eagles are going to be very hard-pressed to
continue to have the success they've had with the New York Giants now having somebody that they can actually throw the ball to or hand the ball off to. So I'm really impressed. Meanwhile, the Philadelphia Phillies seem to have made a trade. They traded for Justin Bourd and their bench, and that looks like things are picking up for the Phillies. They're now a point and a half, a game and a half up on the rest of the competition in the National League East. And I'm looking forward to seeing the Phillies finish the season in first place and go on to the playoffs, because I'm frankly getting a little worried about my Yankees. It's getting a little tough for the Yankees. They've had some real problems with their pitching. Suddenly they're not hitting. There are all sorts of things going out there, and the important thing that we see is that there are all kinds of people out there who are hoping the Phillies manage to get out from under these problems. So the interesting thing coming up is that there's a number of people out there who are thinking that the Phillies are on their way to a World Series championship, but you know they've got to play the Red Sox this week coming up on the 14th and the 15th, and Philadelphia and the Boston Red Sox might just be an interesting matchup. Who knows if that's going to be the World Series pair. Phils have good pitching. They've got Nola. They've got Blasquez and a couple of other good pitchers. A decent bullpen. They certainly don't have the record the Red Sox have, because the Phils are not even a 600 team. They're a 590 team or a 580 team last I looked. But the Red Sox are going through the rest of the league like the Boston Buzzsaws. It's the only thing I can call them. Meanwhile, Pat, I know that we touched on this briefly when I walked in, but what were the Packers thinking when they let Jordy Nelson go?
Believe me, I was so upset. And, they said they were thinking of the cap, The real problem was that, as I looked at it, is they needed to give Jordy another year to show what he could do that now that Aaron Rodgers is back. You know, I don't think you can take a look at Jordy's performance last year, with anything at all other than, hey, you know, he didn't have his quarterback. Huntley was just not throwing to him. I don't think Huntley could, but that synergy between, quarterback and Nelson, I just can't believe it. And, of course, he went right out and got something like $13 million, as I recall, from Oakland. So, they've done this before. They've every once in a while they'll make what I consider a stupid trade. I know they let Peppers go, and I guess he was a different situation only from the standpoint as I think it was the end of his contract. Of course, it was the end of Jordy's, but why in the world they didn't pay him more? I don't think they would have had to pay him more than his prior contract. He might have even taken something less. I think he wanted to stay in Green Bay. In fact, I'm confident that he wanted to stay in Green Bay. But that was, I think it was not only a poor move from the standpoint of letting a player go too early, he was really a fan favorite, and it also, I think, gives a signal to a lot of older players that, hey, there's no loyalty. And if there's no loyalty from the Packers, there's no loyalty.
If there's no loyalty from Green Bay, there's no loyalty anywhere to the players, because I always thought of Green Bay as a cut above and a little bit more humane and a little bit more player-friendly and fan-friendly, because they are a small-market team and they're a unique team. One of the things that I was really surprised about is that the Packers don't seem to have much of in the way of new wideouts, new receivers. The receiving corps just does not look good. Rodgers was critical of him the other day, according to the NFL Spin Zone.
Oh, really? I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. And usually he's not.
Yeah, he was very critical of the efforts of the team's young crop of wideouts, blasting their efforts. He said, I don't know how you can make it any simpler. You've got what the play will be in our terminology on the card. The effort level was low, especially what I'm accustomed to having run that period for a number of years. It's not a good start for us on the carded period for a lot of these young guys, although he was complimentary of a fifth-round pick, D'Angelo Yancey, and an undrafted receiver, Geronimo Allison, a former Bengal Jake.
Oh, Geronimo Allison, they have some hopes for.
Geronimo Allison.
Yeah.
Is his name.
Isn't that his name?
I love that name.
Geronimo, I do too.
Allison.
But they were looking forward to, but, you know, it just, people like, I mean, there were people like Donald Driver. There are people like Jordy Nelson. They just, even if they're not playing at their peak, they give enough. They come in. You know, and especially after not having Aaron Rodgers for a year, that was what was so shocking to me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, he's got Cobb and Davante Adams to throw to, and I get that. That's the depth chart that the Packers have. They've got two very good guys to throw to, but you're not going to have them in for every play. And remember, these guys take a pounding over a season, and they're going to miss some games. So you really need the young guys who can step up. And right now, Green Bay does not look pretty in that respect. What's your take, Pat? Rodgers is unhappy with some of these moves. He also griped about losing a quarterback coach, Alex Van Pelt, who I think was really his mentor in a lot of ways. And he was unhappy about...
Where did Alex go?
I'm not sure. I think they simply didn't pick him back up.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. It's surprising to me because, you know, this sounds like a major sea change at Green Bay. What's going on there?
Boy, I have to tell you, I don't know. I know they have a lousy, in my view, they have a lousy schedule this year.
Well, you know, they play the Jets December 23rd.
I know that.
And I'm thinking of going to that game, and I'll tell you that our State Bar Association is offering discount tickets. Did you see that?
I saw that.
I was tempted.
One of the things I was going to talk to you about is whether or not we should try to get, four or eight tickets.
I think it would be fun to go to that, although... you know, for a lot of people, it's too close to Christmas.
I know. Well, for me, I mean, that's an awful time to be playing. And
that makes Christmas Tuesday.
Let me tell you what I was thinking. That would be the game to get enough people to get a box. That would be the one time a year that it would be fun to be indoors.
Oh, it's always fun to be indoors in December, unless you're skiing.
Yes.
Playing hockey.
But that would be a fun time to have
a
box
seat.
It
certainly would. But, you know,
all of my friends that, used to have box seats, you know, unfortunately, they're all retired.
Well, here's what I don't get. Why do you schedule, you schedule a 1 o'clock game on a Sunday 2 days before Christmas? Now, I don't think that's going to help. Now, the Jets are in a transition year. Maybe they'll end up making the playoffs. Maybe they won't. Green Bay, well, we just talked about what Aaron Rodgers said, and I think he knows that this is not going to be a playoff year for Green Bay because of the turnover and because injuries will take their toll. So I'm trying to figure who's going to show up for this game except maybe 20,000 Jewish people that can't figure out what to do on a Sunday afternoon.
Oh, I disagree. I think that, honestly, Packer fans are, they're pretty diehard. And I think that there will be a lot of Packer fans. And, I've actually been thinking about suggesting that we might celebrate Christmas a few days later. You know, we no longer have these little kids who have to have their all their gifts under the tree because Santa's coming. So who knows? But no, and as I said, and I've said this before, Packers have a number of home games late in the season. They're playing Minnesota at home. That's one of the last games, as I recall. They're going from L.A., and I think the coach in L.A. is, we have to talk about him at some point. I mean, this is a very interesting young coach. But they're going out, they're playing the Rams, and then the next week they have to go to play the Patriots. I mean, that's, you know, think about it. They're in Wisconsin, have to fly out to play the Rams in California, and then back to Wisconsin, and then back out to the East Coast. I mean, somebody was not really thinking about it. But their season this year, we can't find a game in Green Bay that we want to go to because of either the teams who are playing there or the weather when the teams we'd like to see are playing.
Well, you know, the matchups that I'd like to see are obviously games like Eagles-Packers, Giants-Packers, even Chiefs-Packers, which is kind of a fun matchup, or Bears, because those are the kinds of rivalries that have been around for a long time, and, you know, they're exciting. And it's more than just the 60 minutes of football. It's also the excitement and the passion that comes from a long-term rivalry, particularly in football, where you're only playing a limited number of games. And especially when you're playing out of your conference or out of your division, you might not see that matchup for three or four more years.
That's true.
And so, you know, it becomes kind of a special treat. I mean, the last time I saw a Packer game, they were playing the Jets here in New Jersey. And it was a weird game. It was Aaron Rodgers' first year as the Green Bay quarterback after Brett Favre had left. And it was a weird game. It was a 9-6 game because one of the Jets' receivers dropped a ball, a beautifully thrown pass. Or actually, he caught it, but he caught it outside the end zone. He was about two steps out when he hauled in this ball, and it was not right in front of me, but at the other side of the end zone. And we had end zone corner seats because I like to sit there. I think that's a neat place to sit. And, you know, because you get to see the arc of the ball in the air, and you get to see the receiver and the jockeying for position between the receivers and the guys who are covering them. And, you know, it's absolutely fascinating to watch football from that perspective. One of the things that I think TV is missing is,
oh well, TV
to have a
misses
camera
most
on
of
that
it.
Play.
Yeah,
I'm finding coverage worse and worse.
I have to tell you.
I turned down the sound. How about you?
Well, I think that the, I mean, if you're watching on television out in Wisconsin, it's, you know, a lot of people, what they do, at least for Packer games out there, is they'll turn down the sound and then they'll listen to the radio.
Yeah.
Because the radio guys are so good. And
the radio guys have to actually create it in your mind.
Right. But and also out there, it would be a local radio guy, and they really know the teams. And I guess it means a lot. I mean, I know that our son, John, you know, announces, he started out just announcing at the college at the University of Wisconsin in River Falls. He started out with hockey. I mean, now he's apparently doing hockey, and he does baseball for the town, and you know, he has a job that they've been pretty flexible with him. So he's just announcing, you know, almost all the time, and so they're a big sports family, so that's fun. They all get to go, but it really takes, especially if you're doing it radio, it really takes the right person. Now, if you're at the stadium and announcing, it's a different situation. And sometimes, you know, I get tired of some of these sports announcers who are just chit-chatting all the time. I mean, you know, I want to watch the game. I think, you know, some of them are good. Actually, you know, guess who I thought last year who did a nice job?
I'm going to take a wild stab. Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah, but I really liked Tony Romo.
I thought he was pretty good.
Rodriguez
has not done a bad job for baseball on ESPN.
Right.
I find him interesting to listen to. He does have some insights when he's not dating Madonna or J-Lo or all these other beautiful young women. But on the other hand, Tony Romo was interesting.
Well,
he had some good things to say.
He really did, and he had some instructive things to say. They weren't dumb.
Point, because I think a good football announcer should also be a little bit of a teacher.
I agree, especially for people, especially for people who don't know the game. However, he wasn't obnoxious about it.
Yeah.
Almost all the time where he was talking about something that was going on, I found it interesting, I found it educational, and it didn't interfere with my watching the game.
You know what was interesting about Romo? I listened to him announce a game, and it wasn't a game where I would have ordinarily watched. I think it was, and I remember the Chiefs were playing somebody, and it might have been Oakland or one of their other rivals, and Romo didn't talk down to the audience, and he explained plays, and he broke plays down. The thing that bothers me more and more about watching an NFL game is that you don't get to see the game, you get to see the commercials,
you get
to see the chit-chat, and I'm turned off, Pat. I turn the sound down and I...
No, you know what I've started doing? And I got this from my brother. My brother lives out in Wisconsin. And they don't have a lot of good weather. So in the fall, what he does is he just tapes the game and then goes out and does things and come home. Don't listen to the radio. Don't answer the phone. So we've started doing that where we'll tape it so that when we start watching it, we can go through quickly, scroll through all the commercials. I guess I shouldn't say that because, the commercial people are not going to be happy.
Yeah.
But, I do like to watch commercials. The Super Bowl is fun. You watch the commercials because they're always great. But, and you can watch a game in a little more than an hour.
That's right.
Doing that.
That's true. I had put on... it was one of the Stanley Cup playoffs games that the Flyers were in against Washington. It was the one game that they won. I had recorded that because I couldn't be home to watch it. I think it was a Sunday afternoon game. And we had to go out somewhere. So I came back and I fired up the TV and the recording device. And what I found was that if I missed a play, where I wanted to see how a play developed, I could go back and watch it.
Right.
It was like it was like watching the tape if you were with the coaches teaching you something, and it was really very interesting because the problem with TV is it follows the ball, it follows the puck, it follows the quarterback, it follows the puck carrier, and you don't get to see why the play really worked because the camera may be off the player who's coming into the play that makes it happen.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And in fact, the other thing that I used to say I really love being at the game.
I do.
What I like to do is be at the game, watch it, and then go back and watch it on television to get the stuff that you missed. But the one thing that you actually can see sometimes him strategizing on the sidelines. And, of course, with Brett Favre, he was this big kid, and, he'd be running up and down the sidelines. It's part of football. On the other hand, the sport that I'd rather watch on television? I am finding, although I love to go to the U.S. Open, the atmosphere, etc., unless you have really good tickets and good seats, you're up in the nosebleed, and you honestly can't see it. You cannot see it.
That's an interesting observation because, you know, I felt that way for years. As arenas got bigger and bigger and tickets got more and more expensive, I began to say to myself, you know, for what it cost me to go to one hockey game, I can get the entire NHL package for the year, and I can replay anything. Plus, I can. The NFL has something in their package now where you can change camera angles or go to different cameras as the game is broken down after the game is over. And so, if you want to see what somebody was, you know, play away from the puck, you can see that even during a commercial break, if that's what you choose to do.
With the NHL
package, and it's been very interesting. You know that they give you that technological option, but very few people use it now. As you know, I love hockey. I played hockey until I was about 35 or 40, and you know when I was learning to play in college, and it was an intramural sport, coaches always stressed the play away from the puck and the anticipation and the puck sense. And I think if you're just focused on the play and the ball or the puck, you miss something. And the other thing, too, is talking about football. The line play, to me, is always the most exciting part of the game because that's really where the battle takes place.
Right.
And that, to me, is the trenches. And that's exciting, watching that. And the problem is, as soon as the ball is snapped, they're focusing on the quarterback dropping back. So you miss the blocks. You miss the defensive tackle opening the hole for the rushing linebacker to get in there. And you don't always get to understand why that sack really occurred.
Well, let's take a quick break, and then I want to come back and tell you a little bit about our debate about the NFL players that were inducted into the Hall of Fame between my grandkids and me. So if we have time, we'll take a couple seconds to do that, a couple minutes.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you...
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for...
Okay, Bill, we're back for just about 1.5 minutes, if that much, 1 minute. So anyway, the discussion was the speeches at the Hall of Fame induction. And, of course, I really thought that Jerry Kramer did the best job and felt that he should have been in many, many years ago. It was interesting that Tommy, my grandson, of course, really liked what Brian Dawkins had to say. And I'm not saying that I didn't, but it was very interesting. He didn't think that Jerry Kramer deserved to be in. And I think that was just a matter of, you know, he really never saw Jerry Kramer play. I mean, he was, you know, he was just a terrific guard. I mean, he, you know, he was a blocker. I mean, he kicked field goals, you know, came out of this little Idaho town and apparently went to school and wanted to be a fullback. And, you know, he was a fourth-round Green Bay Packer, and what I loved was when he was picked in the fourth round by Green Bay. He said, "Where the hell is Green Bay?" And that's what it was like. He was there, of course, in 58, which was the year before Lombardi. And, and that year, their first year, they had a 1-10-1 record. And then
1-10-1.
You're kidding. 1-10-1. And they were actually beat by Baltimore 56-0. 56-0 that year. Anyway, he was in Super Bowl 1 and 2. But Lombardi came, and Lombardi had such an impact on all of these guys. And